I'm Laura Harper Lake.
And I'm Sarah Reitzman, and you're listening to Creative Guts.
Hey, folks, thanks for joining us for this episode of Creative Guts.
I'm particularly excited for today's episode because we're talking with someone whom I admire a great deal, Matt Wyatt. Matt is the associate producer and publicist for the Rochester Opera House and the Rochester Performance and Arts Center, the founder of the Rochester Museum of Fine Art, and a painter himself.
Holy cow, we have a lot to cover, so let's just jump right into it. Here's Matt Wyatt.
Hi, Matt. Welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, hi. I wasn't ready. I'm so nervous. I've never done this before. So, no, really. This is my first podcast ever.
Really?
Yeah, nice. Really. Yeah.
We have a ton of stuff to cover because you do a bunch of cool stuff. So let's just like start with your day job and get that out of the way. So tell us a little bit about the Rochester Opera House and the Rochester Performance and Arts Center and what you do there.
Oh, so I guess to sum it up, you could probably just call me the publicist. I mean, but I have so many different jobs that so there's not really a real title for it. So I do just a little bit of everything that just needs help. So mostly I'm doing like posters and booklets and, when we get the contract for the next show, I get that. And then I'm putting it on the website. So basically every print material, anything that's coming out of the Opera House is coming from my desk at one point or another. So I'm really proud of that. And I get to get paid to be in the arts, which I never thought would ever happen. So
that's every artist's dream.
Yeah. Yeah. So, we have all kinds of shows that come through and we do our own theater shows, and that's really like our heart and soul. And I photograph all those shows too. So I'm on stage and I get to see it before anybody else and up close too. And I see these like young kids in some cases, like singing their hearts out, and it's like, that's a view that that nobody else has. Mm-hmm. So I'm really lucky to have the job that I have for sure. So
how long have you been doing that for?
I'm going into my third year now, but I've been doing things off and on at the Opera House since like 2013.
Oh, wow.
But that was just because of the museum. We were doing a short film series at the Opera House. So that's sort of how I got the job was, I was there and my boss now, Anthony, who's our producer, was bartending. Like I said, we do like every job basically. Yeah. And he takes out the garbage at the end of the night too. And he was bartending and I had a bunch of like pamphlets or something that I was trying to, trick people into buying into that night. And and he was like, hey, you make all this stuff, would you ever want to do that here full time? And there happened to be like two or three positions that were sort of opening up at the time. And he was just like trying to make it all into one conglomeration. So I was like, I was working at Apple at the time, which I love Apple, but it's like, it's just like soulless, that position that I was in. So I was like, yeah, I'm ready. Like, I'll meet you on Monday. And and that was when he tricked me into taking the job. And I've been doing it ever since. And I actually really do love it. It's like a no alarm clock job.
Yeah, that's really cool.
That's
what
you have too.
Yeah,
yeah,
me too.
It's lucky. Yeah. And like, I don't take it for granted because I know how many people hate their jobs. So. Yeah.
Right.
Like I did, I hated working for Apple. I hated every job that I ever had up until I started working at the Opera House. Is that a good resume? Not one reference. Yeah.
Really, I feel like that's really common for extra creative folks because they're not being challenged and they're not pushing the creative energy into an outlet they actually could be proud of.
Yeah.
So it sounds like you do a lot of like graphic design stuff at work too.
Yeah. Yeah. Basically, it's all graphic design and web design and different things like that. And photography, certainly videography occasionally. We've even talked about doing a podcast, too. But after tonight, I decided that I didn't want to anymore.
That's fair.
Because you see how troubling it is when you have guests. Yes. That are, like,
unruly. Yeah. That's me.
So, How did you learn how to do these things? Did you like formally train to be a graphic designer, or is this something you are you self-taught?
No. Well, I went to art school. So, I mean, I did learn a lot about that there too. And it's just something that I've always really enjoyed doing. So since I was a kid, I was sort of messing around with art and the computer when that came in. Like, we didn't get a computer until I was like in high school. But I mean, I just fell in love with it. And, you know, I did work for Apple. I do love Apple products and everything. I'll go on and on and on about it. And I could tell you the whole history where they were every day of the year.
This podcast is not sponsored by Apple.
Yeah. But we could use the money, right? We could use the money.
We need to buy gift bags for our greedy guests.
Actually, this podcast is brought to you by Audible. Audible.com. Get your free book today. Next is Squarespace. I know all of them by heart. So I'm a big podcast fan. So.
I definitely know Squarespace by heart. I made my own Squarespace site, RomanMars.com.
Yeah. So to sum it up, yeah, I'm doing that kind of stuff and some production stuff as far as like they need like something printed and or like the programs or different things like that. And, you know, I love going to concerts and things, you know, and getting to meet. I got to spend time with like Gilbert Gottfried, which is a man that I would never expect to have like 30 minutes with, like normal Gilbert, too. Like, I hope he's not listening. But he was talking in his real voice, though. And it was like, we were like talking shop and I'm showing him around the backstage and everything. And it was just so surreal to be talking to this person up close, just like a regular guy. And then I saw him on like CNN like a day later and he was wearing the same shirt. So
you lost all respect.
Yeah, it was like no fashion abilities at all. No, but I really loved meeting him. And, you know, we have like people like Leanne Rimes coming and we have the Wailers coming and all these different things coming up. So we're really excited. We're doing Full Monty and Christmas Carol and Rock of Ages in the spring. So there's a lot of great shows that we're doing coming up.
That is awesome. Yeah. Wait, are you guys doing the Evil Dead musical?
Oh, yes.
I'm going to it.
Yeah.
I bought 4 tickets and I'm going on a double date.
Oh, I hope you're sitting in the splatter zone.
We are.
And I'm not kidding about that because we are. Last year, people dressed in white and we were like, whoa, like we did not realize how bloody they wanted to get.
They just leaned into it. Like, get me as much as you
yeah,
can.
They're like jumping to get hit with like squirt bottles of blood. Yeah. And like, so this year we're throwing out like gallons.
I don't really know what you guys are talking about, but I love it. It sounds great.
It's
and
Evil,
I want to go.
Evil Dead the musical. So it's exactly what Evil it sounds
Dead,
like.
Evil Dead movies, Ash versus Evil Dead, the show, or
no.
Army of Darkness.
No. You know Noah's my always answer to stuff.
And like, I don't want to sound like we're endorsing those films either because they're absolutely horrible.
But
like
they're horrible on purpose.
And exactly.
I mean,
and
they're B movies.
And that's why it's great to have like a musical version.
Yeah,
like
yeah,
you
extra
know.
Campy and yeah. really cheesy.
And it's really funny too. It's a really great show.
I'm so excited.
Yeah. We also do Christmas Carol, which is coming up, and this is like the third year in the row that I will be turned down. Well, I am the understudy, but I probably won't make the stage for Tiny Tim, which every year that 9-year-old that gets the part every single year. I mean, she's still 9 years old. Like, you're not kidding anybody. And it's like, you know, give me my chance to get out there and do this, you know?
What a trollop.
For our listeners' benefit, Matt is 6'6".
Oh, yeah. I forgot.
So the joke is now illuminated to all, not just who's in the room.
Well, I could have sworn that this was televised when I was... Because...
My little iPhone camera.
That's why I wore a 3-piece suit and now wasted. So
with the top hat, you're almost 7 feet tall.
I look like Abraham Lincoln. I can't ride a horse, though.
Thought that the suit was for us, so
can
whatever.
Lincoln ride a
he
horse?
Could ride a horse. I cannot. Oh. And my feet drag. So.
Oh my gosh.
Have you ever performed in front of a live audience?
No.
Have you ever wanted to being involved in this kind of setting? Has that ever like thought, ooh, maybe I should do this?
No, actually, yes. I don't know what I would be if I were a performer, but probably a comedian. Like, I love telling jokes. I love making people laugh. Like, that's probably one of the, like, even more satisfying to me than, like, making art, like, for real.
But you're not that funny.
Yeah, I know.
I'm out of here. This is over. Shut
Today's
it down.
Episode of Creative Guts is really short.
Yeah. No, I think like as a kid, like I didn't know, like I was so creative and I had like all these like dreams and different things, but I didn't know that any of it could really be real. Like I didn't know that I could be an artist or do any of those things, or if I wanted to sing or play music or something or be an actor, like I didn't know how to ask to do that or anything. Like, and my mom didn't know. She was like, you know, they'd want to like, I'd be in my room like recording like something and singing into the recorder or something, and they'd be outside laughing at me. So it's like, you know, like they didn't know either. Like they had no idea what to do with all this like bundle of like energy, and like they just were like, you know, he's like, okay, he's occupied, we'll leave him alone, he's not setting fires anymore, you know, like, so we'll just let him record whatever he wants to record. But you know, I didn't know anything, or like I would draw like Santa Clauses because I didn't really like know that art was a real thing. Like I didn't know what a gallery was or an art museum or anything. Like I had no exposure to any of that when I was a kid. So like my parents knew that I was like artistic, like so they'd like buy me colored pencils and stuff for Christmas, but like they didn't know. Even in school, like I would always get picked to like on the science, like to, you know, to, like draw the, you know, the heart or whatever we're drawing, you know. So I was like always really popular when it came to like, oh, you know, he can draw, like he knows how to draw. But I didn't know that that was a real thing or that I could be that. And even as like, you know, like a small, like closeted gay boy, like I didn't want to be like out in like in front of everybody either. Like I was jumping up and down, but I was afraid to be like in front of people and like put myself out there because they might like figure it out or something. Oh, so, you know, so I really like kind of kept that close. It wasn't until high school that I had a teacher, her name's Abra, and I'm still friends with her today. She really like saw this and pushed me to like keep doing it. Spalding High School, Abra Andrews, she's still a teacher there. And she really pushed me to make art and be serious about it and like paint the edges of the canvas. My students don't leave raw edges. Like those kind of things stuck in my head. And I took it really seriously. And suddenly, like, I think she just inflated me so much that I really thought like, hey, you know, maybe I can really do this. Like, maybe people aren't just like kidding around, and like, maybe I'm good at this or something, you know? And I'm not going to be like Tiny Tim in Christmas Carol this year for the pageant. So like, why don't I try like drawing? And so she encouraged me to work on the computer, because I also had this other like way nerdy side where I was like, computers, you know, like I wanted an Apple Newton, Google it. Had one in high school, like terrible nerd, you know, didn't want anybody to notice me in high school, yet I'm carrying around this 4-pound device. Google it, you'll know what I'm talking about. But after you listen to the show. So she was like, well, you know, why don't you make art on the computer, and hooked me up with like this drawing tablet. And I would sit for hours at home, like drawing. And back then, you know, you had it on the desk and you were looking at a screen. So you're drawing on the desk, but you're looking, and it was a challenge. And I really like wanted to just master that. So I would work on it for hours, and, you know, I'd sort of bring things into her and it would sort of count as my homework. Cause I was, again, I was a terrible student, even in art. So like at one time in ceramics in high school, I had like a 7. That was my grade.
Out of
100, 7 out of 100. And
I was just hoping it was out of 10.
And my teacher, she was like, Matt, like, you're really good at this. Like, why do you have a 7? There are like, that kid is smoking cigarettes in the back of the room and he's got a 94. You know, it's like, so like, I, you know, I was trying to smarten up, but you know, so I'd come in and Abra would take these projects and she'd say, okay, like this is going to count for this. And this is going to count for this. You're going to do your own thing. And, you know,
it's kind of like an independent study,
yeah,
in a way.
Yeah, now they call it that. Like back then it was just like, you know,
being a little
yeah, basically. And, you know, and she was just so cool, though. And it was like one of the first like people that, like, we're only like 10 years apart, too. So she was like in her 20s, like she was young when she was teaching me. So we weren't that far apart. So like, she was like the first like cool person I had like connected with, like, mm-hmm. at that age, that wasn't like, you know, me trying to make my friend's parents laugh and all that crap, you know, or like teachers that, you know, and nobody could crack them, like, you know, so I would try to make them laugh or something. But like, she challenged me and she was cool and she like had her own style, and I'm going on and on about her. I love her. And she was just such an inspiration to me. And she, one day I came in to school and she said, cause I had her for the whole day by senior year. I took every art class that they had. And I was there all day long from beginning to end, except for computer class, which we'll talk about later on another show.
Just, our other podcast, yeah. Computers.
Yeah, yeah. I'll give you the Wyatt bump, and like the ratings will go through the roof, because I know Max. Anyway, so I had her for the whole day, and she was like, you know, telling me about this contest, this art contest, and it's a statewide thing. And I didn't know anything about it. She was like, but it's due tomorrow. She's like, and this is really serious. Like, she really was like, you better go home and do this. Like, don't come back tomorrow with nothing. This isn't like all the other times I told you to do your homework. So like, I went home and I was like, okay, I can do what, it was a blank slate. I can do whatever I want. Like, there's no requirements at all. So I sat down and I started drawing these portraits on the computer, and then I got like one that I was really into, and I started applying different filters and manipulating it in different ways, and I added some like pop colors, like I barely even remember it, but so I submitted it to her the next day, and she was like, good, great, it's out, you know. And I didn't hear about it for a long time. And it turns out it was a Scholastic Art and Writing Contest. I don't know if you've ever heard about that.
Yeah.
So it's Scholastic Publishing that does this art and writing awards like every year at the state level. And then you, you know, if you progress, you know.
Nationals.
Yeah, so I did. And yeah, so
that's
I got to go to New York and go to Carnegie Hall, and they had this great big ceremony, and my mom was way up in the balcony, like the third balcony, like she was just like an inch high, and with a disposable camera. Come on, Connie. And so I have no photos of this experience whatsoever. Like, the only time that I'll probably ever have my art in Carnegie Hall, like, and my mom's up there in the third balcony with a disposable camera, like, come on, you know. But there were no digital cameras yet, unless you were an Apple user, and they had had one since 1984. But anyway,
are you still working for them? Maybe.
I'm just now I'm not going to be able to help myself. So she was up in the third balcony and I was down in the orchestra, and I just remember like thinking like, wow, like this is for real. Like, yes. Like Russell Simmons is here, and like Hillary Clinton, and like all these great people, and like Laura Bush is on the screen, like via satellite. And so I got this big hunkin' medal, and I went home, and I kind of, you know, again, I sort of forgot about it. Other things were happening. But by now, like, I was getting into gallery shows, and people were asking to exhibit my work. And it was like, I felt pretty cool, yeah. You know? And by now I had, you know, some experience with galleries and looking at things and realizing that this was like a business to some people, and that I could hang my art up in a nice clean white room and they would like show it to people. Like, I, you know, I couldn't believe it. So I kept doing that, and I just exhibited every chance that I got everywhere that would let me. And I was shameless about it too, you know, cause I'd go into a gallery and I'd say, well, your bathrooms doesn't have any art in it. You know, yeah. Like I would, you know, so I always had that sort of like Yankee ingenuity about it. Like I knew that that's what I wanted to do, and I was ready to do, it didn't matter how demeaning it was. I was going to get my art into that bathroom if it killed me, you know? Mm. So that's what I kept doing until they just, you know, called the police.
This is such a great message for art teachers, the like 180 that you took from a kid who didn't know that being an artist was a real thing to like being an artist and all the stuff you do now.
Yeah. And I was a terrible student. And if it wasn't for art, you know, I wouldn't have like started paying attention. And I went to school after that, you know, I went to college after, and like, I had no plans to go to college at all before I met her, before she had, you know, sort of like pushed me into this yeah. whole thing. And like, I was a willing participant in all this. Like I was like really like sort of amazed that anybody like gave a, you know, So it just made me want to keep making more and more stuff. And I'd make like a new series and I would just trash the old one because I was already like sick of it. Like, I just was like sort of addicted to that. Like, I wanted to always show something brand new. And I would like dip my toe into like photography or printmaking or different things, you know, because I would just sort of want to use the materials. And when I went to school, I went to the art, no longer, but the Art Institute, the New Hampshire Institute of Art in Manchester.
Well, I'm from Chester College, which is also no longer.
Right.
When we shut down, they shipped the remaining students to the Institute.
Yeah, we absorbed you, right? Yep. Yeah. Well, it's a really sad story, actually, the whole Institute thing. But, I mean, they're still around, but it's not the same.
Yeah,
I mean, when I went, there were only 200 students there. And the senior studio was like 10 people my first year. And I knew all of them. And they were amazing. And that was the first place that I had really seen, like, okay, they're not just like making like little like dog and pony art like I am, but they're like really pushing it. And like, and that's what I just went into the rabbit hole. Like, and, you know, if I was making a lot of work before, I was like, after I met these folks, I was like, it's all I could eat, sleep, and breathe. And then after school, it was like, I didn't know what to do with myself. It was like, when I didn't have that structure, that institute around me, it was like, well, now what do I do with all this stuff? Like, you know, and figuring out what you do after is sometimes a big challenge. And a lot of my peers are probably not even making art anymore, you know?
Same, actually, yeah. I have a bunch of friends on social media that I see that are just not, even if you have a day job, you know, that's respectable, but not even pursuing it in their own free time. It's like they just lost their lust for it. And that's really sad.
I remember some really talented people that do not make art anymore. And it's like, it's a crime.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just a crime. And I always try to encourage these people when I see them, because I remember how good they really are still. And you don't lose it, but it is a muscle that you have to continuously exercise, or, you know.
And if they lost the community that reinforces that this is a great thing and you're actually good at this and, you know, keep at it, and they're just at a day job where people are just talking about what was on TV last night and not absorbing any, you know, creativity in that, then it's going to be easier to let it go.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. A lot of kids, they grew up with that structure. You know, you're going to go home and you're going to do this drawing you're going to work on this drawing for 3 hours. When you come back, I expect you to be at this point. You know, that people get into that and they, you know, but then when it's not there, when that like sort of safety isn't there, and maybe that's why like being such a bad student has worked in my, because I just want to keep working. But I see how some really talented people have just sort of put it down, and it's like, you know, maybe it's time you pull those things out of the closet and start working again. And you know, so
do you want to talk to us about the Rochester Museum of Fine Arts?
No. Yeah,
so,
of course.
I have a choice. Great having you on the show. The door is that.
Yeah. Are you from Rochester?
I was born at Frisbee Hospital,
okay,
and I graduated at Spalding High School. So I was there my whole life, and then I left to go to school. And I traveled a little bit. I went to New York a bunch of times to, you know, visit galleries and museums and everything. And that's where I like really soaked up all of that sort of art culture. And when I came back after school, and my friends, there's four of us that started the museum, and two of us are still really committed to it. Amy and I, Amy Regan. And, it's, you know, I get a lot of credit for the museum, but it's because I'm so like loud and gregarious, but like, she's really like, you know, the backbone of the whole operation, the one that like keeps everything like, you know, on an even keel. And has like some incredible ideas. And sometimes I'm just like spinning off into the ether on an idea, and she sort of brings me back home and like reminds me what we're actually working on. And so, I mean, this is really, and we're both Capricorns too. So we're like, we're really stubborn and determined people. So it's like, that's why it's been going on for so long. So this will be our 8th year in November. So,
wow.
Yeah.
That is way longer than I thought.
Yeah.
That's crazy. So maybe we'll save all these questions for when we interview Amy. She really knows what's going on.
You really should, though, because she would be a great interview. Much better than me. But Rochester really is my hometown, and I love this place. It's gritty. It's exactly what it looks like, and there are definitely like two sort of Rochesters like happening in parallel. Like, I mean, there's this one side, there's these people that are really like activated and ready to this resurgence of creativity and vibrancy in the downtown. They can't wait to see this. And they, you know, there's a lot of support for that.
And then the other side is city council. Just kidding. Well, I'm sorry.
Well, you said it, so I don't have to. But I will say there are a few city council members that show up to everything. Like every event that I've ever done, they're there. And so it's like we're at the point after 7 years or almost 8 years old where people are finally starting to like believe it. And I read like the headline of a blog once that said like if your business can make it 7 years, then people just think you've been around forever. So it's like this year, I've noticed that like people are just like, oh yeah, the museum is already doing that. And it's like, really? Like you already, like, I still feel very naive about it. Like, mm-hmm. like people don't know what I'm doing or like they don't read about it or anything. Like, even though it's like out there and stuff, like I still am constantly telling people like, yes, we have an art museum, you know, because it's so different too. Like we're not the Courier. We're not the Met. We're, you know.
So do you have a building?
So this is the thing. No, we don't.
Yeah, exactly.
We have spaces within public buildings. I mean, and it's a long story, but when we first started, we started in a public space and we just wanted to hang a donated art collection because that's what we had. We had like large inventories of art and friends of ours that had just graduated that didn't know what to do with all this art. So we just sort of started collecting piece by piece and just volunteering to basically show it in public. And then that just sort of got the ball rolling. And then suddenly it was like, well, we have an art collection and the town's never had an art collection before. So like that's a thing. And this was in 2011. And so we started in this building and then we really like moved around a lot because it like, it's not easy like with some of these landlords in downtown to like stay in one place. And like after like the seriously like 15th move, it was like somebody from the city was like, hey, like this is like worth something. And what you're doing is actually like really great and we want to help you. So we started really naively like thinking like we're going to start an art museum, and we were really like sort of pretentious about it, and like we were thinking like we're going to make this really prestigious and people are going to want to be a part of it, and they're going, and it's like, and that just isn't what we are. It isn't what Rochester is either. So we like just once the more we started to like come into our own and get more real about what we were doing, like the better things would get. And so we started in 2011 and we had basically the idea was to show a permanent donated art collection. And we were going to always plan to have like a monthly show that we would change out all the time and just try to get a new artist. And it was really like when I had my daughter Ava, who will be 9 in November, the same day, actually. So all of this started at my daughter's first birthday party. Like she was off to bed and we were like talking shop downtown, like how are we going to make a difference in this town? There's like, because we knew that the city was in revitalization and we really believed that art could help swing the pendulum a little bit. And I think it has after all these years. It's like I look around and I can see the difference. Like we have like affected the visual landscape of Rochester after like really like trying hard. And like oftentimes we were the youngest people in the room and it was like, you know, people laughed at us. Like when we first started, they were like, why on earth would you ever try to start an art museum in, you know, why would you ever try to start that here? Like who, nobody wants that. And people would tell me that. And now it's like, you know, it's the thing that's on all of the attraction brochures and like every department that's trying to get development or anything is like talking about how we have an opera house and how we have a little art museum at the community center.
And Rochester last year was named City on the Rise by New Hampshire Magazine, which the credit was given to the arts community.
That's right.
Like that's something that that everyone should feel really proud of.
I definitely am. And I feel really like proud that people are taking it seriously now, and that they're not laughing, but they're like, okay, how can we help? Like, or they're there for the picture when we're cutting the ribbon now, you know, it's like when they weren't before.
We were part of this.
Yeah.
We want some credit.
Yeah. You know, really. Which is fine, because like I want them there. I want them to see this. Like, I want to make these opportunities for all these artists that are around, like, and not just from Rochester or anything. Like, we rarely show anybody from Rochester because it's just not there. But I mean, when I had my daughter, I was saying, it was like, okay, like, you're not moving to New York, you're not moving to Boston or Miami or doing any of these art, like, you know, capitals. Like, I need to find a way to bring it here. Like, I mean, I want to be around all this great art. It's like, why can't we do it? So eventually we sort of linked up with Main Street and the city, and you know, very early on we started putting art in libraries because we were touring these buildings and like these walls were empty. Like, the bookshelves went up a certain height and then it was just empty wall space. And we're like, we can make an art museum here. Like, we can make this building into like a dual purpose, you know? Mm-hmm. And we've been in the library ever since too. And it's still like one of our best spaces is the Carnegie Gallery up at the top of the stairs. It's a beautiful, naturally lit space that it was just sort of being used as a hallway. Even though it was designed to be a gallery like 100 years ago, it's like, so we sort of revived that. And in the beginning, the trustees were like, and talking about like how people didn't take us seriously, like the trustees were like, okay, we'll give you 3 months. And, you know, and if another museum comes along and and they want to use the Carnegie Gallery, then we'll talk about what thing. And it was like, we signed a thing and it was very serious. And we've been there ever since. Yeah. It's been years.
So you brought your A game, obviously. They were like, you can stay.
There weren't a bunch of other museums like knocking on the door.
Yeah, go figure, right? So it's like, but the library also led to like the community center, and we started in the hallway at the community center, which used to be a high school, and it's just this long, endless hallway. It's like a mile long. You're exhausted by the time you get to the end. There's people giving you water along the trail, and
you're doing a good job. Keep going. You're almost at the bathroom.
And we had 150 pieces of art by then, and this was like in 2014 that we moved in there, and we just filled this hallway full of art, and then eventually, like, they gave us a suite in the building, and that's what sort of led us to where we are now. So we have the three galleries now that we're switching out all the time.
So are you guys a nonprofit?
Yes. Nice. Yes. We're a nonprofit through a fiscal sponsor, which is Rochester Main Street, which is a 501c3. Mm-hmm. So they essentially they make this so easy for us, basically. And we contribute back to their program up to 10% of what we raise. So every time we get a sponsorship, it also helps their event planning and their revitalization efforts, too. So it's like really like it's an easy sell to a sponsor to say, hey, like, you know, you're not only helping the arts, but you're helping them, too. And they got a lot of efforts going on as well. So we're really like fortunate for that partnership.
Do you guys have a strong base of volunteers from the community, or do you have like kind of a committee of people who curate this? You know, how does it kind of operate?
It's mostly Amy and I, but we do have like an art advisory committee that gets together every other month. And essentially what these people are, artists and educators and just different like people that are out and about and looking at art shows all the time. And we sort of get together and we sort of, you know, we don't go over the budget or anything. We go over like, who are we showing? Because we have no budget. We have no bills. We're 100% a community arts initiative. So it's like we're utilizing public spaces to present fine art. And this is a model that I think can be used in any community that's struggling to infuse arts and culture. You know, come to Rochester and like copy us, because there's no reason this can't exist everywhere. And when we first started, this whole idea of like pop-up shows was like kind of a joke. It was like artists didn't we had to like really work on them, like, because they wanted to be in a big sparkly gallery, but all of those galleries are closed. I'm sorry to say now, like they're shutting down because they can't afford to stay open. I mean, and it's like, and I've showed in a lot of these galleries, and it's like, you know, you sell something that you I might end up with like $5 an hour after I've sold a piece, like really. Yeah. And they're taking 40% of it because they got to pay their rent. They got to get paid at the end of the day. And they're doing a great job at doing that. But I mean, most of the galleries that I looked up to when I started the museum are no longer. Mm-hmm. And now our model is starting to pop up in more places around the state now, too. And some like recent developments that I can't talk about right now, but they're closing their gallery and moving to an all events based pop-up initiative. So it's like, I think that it's starting to catch on because it's like, why can't art be in the library? Why can't art be in a two-room suite at the community center or down the hallway? Yeah. When thousands of people are walking through a year,
it's like, God forbid to get seen even more.
Right.
Yeah. If we had a brick and mortar situation, we would be struggling to, first of all, we'd be compromising the type of art that we show. Mm-hmm. None of the art that we show has to sell. And if it does, the artist gets 100% because we don't take a commission, because we don't have any bills, and we're all volunteer. We raise money from small donations and sponsorships, like I said, but when a painting sells, it's like we want the artist to get 100% of it because all I did was put a f***ing nail in the wall, you know? Yeah. So it's like they get 100% and we'll raise our money another way.
And no doubt that's very appealing to all the artists that show.
It's like, come to Rochester and check out our spaces. We have three beautiful spaces that we're constantly like upgrading every little by little. And they're really great spaces to show in, and they're high traffic places that are totally public and free. And in the community center, one thing that I'm really proud of when it comes to the museum, and I talked about how when we first started, it being like we were trying to be really prestigious about it and really fancy, and all the labels were perfectly cut, you know, and everything. And we still like have a high standard for things and that we try to show, but we are in the public spaces, and our sweet neighbors like Department of Health and Human Resources, Jerry's Food Pantry, the community clothing store. I mean, the recreation department, which serves underserved low-income children, all over the city. And it's like, it's like people ask me like, why don't you have a building? Why are you in the community center? It's like, well, that's why. Mm-hmm. Like, we're really passionate about bringing exceptional fine art, and I really stand by that, and making it accessible to all. So our motto is art for everyone, you know.
That's an excellent motto.
I am so into the like efficiency of this. Like, it costs nothing. And you're using up blank space, which would ordinarily be just like white walls, and tons and tons and tons of people get to look at this art. And I'm thinking about all these like blank walls in Durham, and I just want to like cover every single wall with art.
It really enhances charrette photo shoots too. Was that at the Opera House?
It was at the Rochester Performance and Arts Center.
So yeah. That's right. I was the photographer for the charrette that the workforce housing did when they held it there. And I remember, I think I said to you, and I remember talking after like, your whole setup here looks 10 times better because of this really awesome artwork in the background. Like, it enhanced all the people there, and like, especially when they're like talking and being really expressive, and it just felt culturally elevated, you know?
Yeah. Yep.
Well, that feels good to hear. I mean, because like I said, like this idea, this efficiency, I mean, this is what people were laughing at when we would try to explain this idea. People would be like, you can't do that. And it's like, well, we did, you know? And if we can do this, then what can you do to make the community a better place? Mm-hmm. And what can you, because we all know what's wrong with Rochester, but it's like, what the hell are you going to do to fix it?
Right.
You know, art's my thing, but it's like, what's yours? Like, are you a carpenter? Are you a painter? Are you, you know, what can you add to this? Are you a developer? It's like, you know, stop talking about it and start doing something, you know? And Amy and I, like, the way we run all of our meetings or anything, we're also arts commissioners for the city and everything. It's like, I don't want to hear any, like, you shoulds. Like, the last thing I want anybody to tell me when we have, like, 2 years out planned, it's like, don't tell me what I should be working on, because if it's such a great idea, then you can do it. You know,
I can imagine there being like pushback or reluctance, because I can imagine going to Durham and like going to the town hall and being like, hey, this wall is totally blank. We should put some art on it. And then being like, I don't know. I don't know if that's a good idea.
That's
like,
that hasn't been done before.
We would need to get permission. And I'm like, from who? Like,
well, that's
it's
how
not
we started.
Gonna cost you anything.
That's how we started. And it's like anybody could come to Rochester and look at this model and repeat it somewhere else. And we encourage them to, really. I mean, it's like, we want to see art for everyone, for the people that want to view it, that maybe don't even have the means to, like, people that are coming to the community center don't necessarily have the means to even get to the Courier. Right. It's cost prohibitive. Just the gas or the car trip is cost prohibitive to them. Right. So it's like, why don't we try? And the Courier's great. Like, I love the Courier and in the Hood Museum of Art. And we have an embarrassment of riches in New Hampshire when it comes to exceptional art, really. But in Rochester, there was just such a void. And it's like, I want to help that kid like myself that has no idea that those doodles that he's doing in his notebook instead of like homework could actually like be something that's like worth something to people, could be matted and framed and hung on a wall forever, you know.
And that's kind of part of the story behind Creative Guts. I'm going to talk about myself now. Is that okay?
Yes, <fine.
laughs> just we wanted to make folks who thought they couldn't be creative. Like, I hate the phrase, I couldn't draw a stick figure. I say that every time, so I'll probably cut it. But I can't stand it when people say that, because I believe everybody has creativity in them. And so we want to try to get the message out there. And we bring awesome people that are very inspiring, like yourself. Just see, you can do it.
Yeah.
It can be done. So go to a pottery class, go to a poetry slam night, you know, do something.
Come to the I Suck at Art classes at Art Up Front Street.
Yeah,
nice.
By Deb Wheeler Bean.
But even what the two of you are doing right now, just promoting the arts and giving people a platform to come on like the Actor Studio and tell you all about their lives, like, and I mean, I wouldn't know because I would never listen to this show, but I mean, unless it's about me, so I've listened to one, but
a real boost in our ratings after you listen. Thank you.
I'm sure you saw that spike, but. But really, in all seriousness, like, this is a great platform for artists to come on that aren't like always very comfortable talking about themselves and putting themselves out there.
And we've seen that. We've seen all levels of, you know, ability to kind of speak about your art.
Yep.
And even Beth Wittenberg was talking about how, you know, I've never done this before, but I'm trying to talk about what I do to remind myself what I do, to get a handle and to realize, like, oh yeah, this is what I do. And it's like a good tool for creatives to kind of have a mirror, you know, reflect upon what they do.
Well, it's like, you know, like what I was saying, it's like, what are you going to do to make it better? And this is your way of doing it. Like, this is your contribution. It's like everybody, if everybody just decided that this is something that I'm good at and that I can do to help people and to elevate something, whatever that is, like, you know, get going. And so
it's so weird and sort of hard to believe that there's something so magical happening in the Rochester Community Center. So last summer, I took my husband on a date, I'm putting that in quotes, to the Rochester Museum of Fine Art in the Community Center. And I got so much credit for this. And I don't think that he realized that literally all I did was drive him, and it was free, and took him to the Rochester Community Center, which doesn't sound like a date, but it was wonderful. And like, it's just, that's the atmosphere that's created there.
Well, thank you, poor guy. But I mean, you know, I can't imagine what it's like being with you, but I mean,
I can, and let me tell you.
but no, really, though, genuinely, thank you for that, because it is. It's sort of this drab, scary building that you walk in, and then it's like it sort of lights up, and we just have so much talent on the walls, and it's like it is like a place where you can go and check something out for free and be there for 10 minutes or an hour, or, you know, and then leave and go check out something else. Like, we have tons of great restaurants downtown now. The Governor's Inn, we have Revolution.
Go Revolution.
Yeah, like, there's so much. There's so many people trying really hard to add to the city. Those two in particular, of course. Yeah. There's a lot of others, too, that I don't have time to name, but and, you know, I just don't like them as much. But it's like, when it comes to art, I feel like, you know, Rochester is starting to become known more and more for the visual arts and entertainment, too, because the Opera House. But it's like, when it comes to visual art, it's like most people think of Portsmouth. Mm-hmm. But it's like, those galleries are closing.
Yeah.
Like, they're, a lot of them are gone. It's like there's only a handful of them left. And of course, the music hall, which is like $1 billion just to get in. Right. But I mean, it's not exactly accessible to people, but
yeah. You have to be a member half the time to
the
get
music.
Yeah.
The
and music that's their, and that's their deal. Where like the Opera House, on the other hand, like in, like, just to put this into perspective, it's like Rochester Opera House or the Rochester Museum of Fine Arts. We are so opened armed. It's not even funny. It's like, if you have talent and you have a show, or if you have art, it's like, bring it to us. Like, we're waiting for you to come here, and like, we want to put it out there.
Here, take some art.
Yeah, right.
Bring your art.
Yeah, I'm looking around right now about like what I'm going to leave with, you know. But really, it's like, why don't we do a show? Yeah. Because that's like really how it happens. It's like, you know, I talked about our art advisory team. Like, we get together, we would, like, a name like yours would come up, and we have a slideshow going and a computer, and we're pulling up images, and we're trying to show people like, hey, let's bring this to Rochester, not because we think it's going to sell a lot of like cards and pillows and calendars, but because like people need to see this.
It's going to enrich people.
Yeah. We want to add.
You'll have to talk to my agent though, if you're interested, really.
I don't know if I can meet your quote, so.
You two can discuss it. I don't know.
We might take a commission for your show, you know, the first time ever. Yeah, but I mean, we've had some amazing shows really in Rochester that people probably wouldn't even believe. And it's like, look us up, rochestermfa.org. But I mean, we've had Eric Carle, the illustrator from Hungry Hungry Caterpillar. Like, who doesn't know Eric Carle? Like, we've had his art up close in Rochester. Like, you, Portsmouth. We've had Picasso Estate Collection. Right. We just closed an Andy Warhol exhibit. It's like,
what?
Right in downtown Rochester. So it's like, and they donated all four of the prints. They'll be in the museum at the community center forever. It's like, so I mean, these that's a big deal. And it's because we reach out to these people or these collectors, these artists, and we say, like, listen, this is what we're doing. This is what we're passionate about. Will you exhibit with us? And oftentimes they'll say, not only will we exhibit, but we'll send the prints and you can just keep them. Ugh. You know, awesome. We worked with Susan Kerr, who is the original icon designer for the Macintosh in 1984. Going back to Apple full circle.
Fanboy, right?
I reached out to her. I saw her. She was going to go to court for something to testify for Apple. They were suing Samsung or something like this. And she went, and I was like, wait, this is a real person that designed all these like iconic images that are on everybody, like billions of computers around the world from 1984 on. Like, even like if you know Windows 95, like, you know, the solitaire game, she designed the back of the cards. It's like, you don't normally like place somebody with like the art that you see on a computer screen, but she made these, including like the classic like Mac icon that was like the first thing that you saw every time that your computer started up. So I found her website. I reached out to her, and she wrote back, and she was like, yes, I'd love to do a show. I'll send you, you know, 10 prints, and, you know, just keep them. Just hold on to them, you know.
Do you think she wants to be on a podcast?
Reach out to her, really. I mean, she's amazing, cool. And I can't say enough good about her. She was just so generous, and that was one of the real, like, first, like famous artists that worked with us and sort of paved that way, because after that, because we're always like biting and clawing and trying to get ahead and try to like further this mission and make it more like not just legitimate, but more like robust. So like we can reach out to artists in Boston and say, well, we've done these shows. So it's like, if they'll do it, mm-hmm. like, why don't you want to?
You want to be where Warhol was?
Right. It's amazing. You know, it's like, and I mean, it's just fun when things kind of come full circle like that. And, you know, she donated all the prints and they're in the library forever and at the community center forever. So when you're in there, it's like you can actually look at these. We have three prints from Bob Gruen, who is like the like preeminent like rock and roll photographer. He worked with literally every legend you can imagine, like Tina Turner, John Lennon and Yoko Ono, Led Zeppelin. We have these prints, like he sent them to us. So it's like, just because we asked for them, And it always is under the guise of like, we want to do a 2 month exhibit, and you know, and then they usually end up donating them. So that's how we've got a lot of the pieces from our collection is from the shows that we've done.
And that's inspiring in itself. Just if you want something, ask for it. You know, the worst you get is a no, and that's right. Well, you know.
That's right. And when you have a mission that like is really like truly from the heart, and you're really like genuinely trying to just make opportunities for fine artists, but also like help your community and make art accessible to people that don't necessarily have the means to go see it. It's like, I think people can get on board with that a lot easier. And they're like, sure,
yeah,
we like what you're doing. And recently we worked with, I don't want to like name drop the whole time, but we worked with Jeannie Motherwell, who is a fantastic painter, and she's in Boston, and she just had this amazing show. It's just gorgeous. Like I mean, you have to look her up, but you know, she came from an artistic family. Her father is Robert Motherwell, and her stepmother is Helen Frankenthaler, who's like one of the greatest women painters in general. Forget women, but she's, when you talk about women in art, yeah, she's one of those names that comes up all the time. And like, none of this skipped a generation. Like, Jeannie is just, she's not only like a lovely person who I love to see when we do spend time with her, and she always like has a pie or muffins or something, and like we're like, you know, we're starstruck in a way, because every art dictionary or like the art book, it's like, yeah, you flip it open and there's mom, there's dad, there's, you know, and Jeannie's in there too. And it's like, it's just so cool to like meet these people that you admire. And then it's like, you know, so Amy and I went to her studio in Boston, and we're hanging out with her, and we're like, just, there's art all the way up. And it's just like, you can feel like the energy in the room, and we're so nervous. And she was like, yeah, I'll do a show with you. Like, yeah, I'd love to do a show in the library. And like, oh, this is a woman that's doing shows. Like, she doesn't have to do, yeah, like our little like pop-up art shows, you know, like she's like, you know, she's the real deal. But it was the mission. It was what we were trying to do with it that she admired so much. And we still, you know, hang out and talk with her, and, you know, try, and now she even nominates artists to us. Like, yeah, she goes to our website and will send us somebody, send us a name or a link. And, you know, it's, that's what we want, is we want these artists to not just show with us for 2 months and then forget about us, but like stay involved. It's like, if you see something and you think that they want to show in Rochester or something, it's like, let us know. And sometimes they do. And, yeah, you know, that's how
it just builds your community even more.
That's what we hope. Yeah.
That's awesome.
This really whole conversation has made me sort of resent Portsmouth more than I already do, or like our society obsession with Portsmouth.
Yeah. I mean, just because something is like has money or like doesn't make it good, like doesn't make it real. Yep. And people will tell you this about like the galleries in Manhattan versus the galleries in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
It's,
yeah,
like, it's a great example. And I'm not saying that Rochester is Brooklyn, but it's certainly not like ritzy or there's no tourists. There's none of that. It's like, yeah, people are coming to see our shows because it's a great f-ing artist and they want to see great art.
And Brooklyn had to get built up to what it is as a name now.
Yeah.
I mean, it had its real dodgy time, you know, before.
Yeah.
And now it's kind of got the hipster name tag slapped on and it's a bit cooler. But
get into Rochester now. You,
yeah,
know,
yeah,
that's what I tell creative people, performers, artists. It's like, start doing it now, because eventually you're not going to be able to afford to do it here. And, yeah, you're going to wish that you were here.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, that development is creeping closer and closer because, yeah, they're running out of space over there. And people, surprise, can't afford $1 million apartment in, yep, downtown. And,
yeah,
and eventually those will fade too. Like 40 years ago, Portsmouth was not a great place to be either. Yep. And it was the type of place where you would like roll up your window, not that I know because I'm just an infant, but you would roll up your windows at the stoplight because, you know, you,
yeah,
felt a little sketchy.
Yeah.
And it's like, and maybe Rochester has that, but like, I'm okay with that because, yeah, like, at least we're not like falling all over ourselves. And, you know, it's, yeah, like, we're just trying to make great art and attract a different type of person to the town. And you know, there's nothing wrong with it. And we're not alone. There's a lot of other communities that are revitalizing right now, too. You see it in Dover. You see it in Somersworth. It's like another little city that could. And there's great people like my friend Emmett Soldati, who's doing so many great things. In, you know, what I'll stop because one time somebody came up to me at one of these like political events or something. And they were like, oh, my God, you're like the Emmett Soldati of Rochester. And I was like, Emmett Soldati is the Matt Wyatt of, you know, it was like, what the f-? But I do. I love Emmett.
I totally get the comparison, but yeah.
I love it. Why? Because we both have glasses? It was like, you know.
No, because you're both tall and cool.
Yeah, right. He's so handsome, too. Emmett, if you're listening. I mean, I just want you to know that my husband and I invite you to join in our lovemaking. But seriously, he is really talented and he's really like motivated. And he was one of these people that I met a few years back that was like, wait, you're like, you're really doing something and like took me seriously. And because I don't really take myself that seriously a lot, like, and I'm constantly like sort of like doubting myself or like thinking like, oh, well, nobody will ever care about this. And then they like, you know, and sometimes they do. And Emmett was one of those people that was like, listen, like I'm coming up with this like event. I'm going to call it Makers and Shakers, and I want you to be the keynote. And like, so I went to this thing and I had no idea what I was doing. I'd never spoken in front of anybody. I'd always have these dreams of like being a stand-up or something. And I went up there and I bombed hard.
I also bombed mine.
Ugh, it's the worst.
I didn't practice.
I went up there. I was like a freaking cowboy. Like I thought like, oh, like I'll show
them.
Talking
in front of people, no bigs.
So naive. And then you get up there and your knees buckle and I'm like, Emmett, save me. Like, hold me. And I got up there and I bombed, but like at the end, people were coming up to me and they were like, that was really like cool what you just did. And like, cause we were trying to like, just tell people about what we were doing. But I just didn't know how well enough. Like I knew that I wanted to like present this thing, but like I had to learn in this whole process too. Like I didn't start it. I wish I could go back knowing what I know now and just start fresh. And like, where would I be in another 8 years? Like, but, at the time, it was like we were still learning, like live on the spot, like in front of everybody, in the newspaper, on the radio, like, you know, anywhere that anybody would invite me or listen. And, you know, and now I feel a lot more confident about it. But back then, I just wanted to make this thing happen. And yeah. Like, I'm just so sick of people saying like, oh, Rochester sucks. It's like, no, it doesn't.
Yeah.
It doesn't. Yep. It's like there's some good bones here and we're going to do it. We'll show you, you know, and we're still like we still have a lot of work to do. Like, I don't want to pretend like Rochester is suddenly being paved in gold. It's like we still have a lot of work to do. Like there's a lot of other efforts like ours that need to pop up and continue this. And it's not, we're not going to be the hero to save Rochester. Like, and there is no one. It takes a lot of different people all feeling very passionate about whatever they do, whatever their subject is.
Yeah.
And we need that collaboration. And, you know, we're starting to see public art projects pop up that have nothing to do with us. Like, how thrilling is that when people never thought that it would happen and now they're doing it on their own? And, you know, it's a really exciting time. You know, I see people out painting murals now and or coming in to look at art or taking their date, poor guy, to our exhibits. It's like I would have never thought that that would be a thing, that people would go on a date to come and see that. Like, it's like, of course I wanted that, but like I never realized that that was happening.
He loved it.
So I love him.
I tricked that bastard.
But like, how awesome that that's happening. Or like when we have field trips of like young kids that come in and look at art, because like it's not enough to see it in a book or on a computer screen, but to see a real world example right in front of you. It's like, that's pretty cool. Like, and I'm glad that like, I mean, I had no exposure to any of this. And now the kids that are growing up, they will, you know, so it's like
have to take an hour bus ride to do it.
That's right. I'm really proud of that, you know. And they can even come and meet the artist if they want to as well. Like, it's, we're making those connections and keeping it accessible to everybody. So
yeah, it was super weird having you. I'm like standing in the community center and I'm looking at your art, and then like I turn and you're standing over there and I'm like, oh, that's neat.
Yeah.
Like, it's a awesome, weird, like really accessible, very down to earth thing.
Yeah. Somehow I got some of my own art in there too.
Yeah. Know? I was wondering about that. Yeah. I was like, you just like sneak it in.
We found out how.
I got to ask about the alley separators and the boarded windows, the installation that James Chase did in 2017. I am obsessed with this. It's like this poetic combination of like art and beauty, and then like the, you know, the Rochester factor, the little like the grit. Yeah. So where did that idea come from? How did that happen?
It just traveling exposure, like, and this is part of the thing. It's like, you know, if you want to make the city better, like try leaving it once in a while. You know, try traveling. You think Rochester has bad neighborhoods? Like, I went to school in Manchester and, like, you know, almost got knifed in the park headed to class. It's like, so don't tell me that Rochester's a dangerous place, because it's just not. You haven't traveled. So it's like we went and we saw all this public art everywhere and we're like, you know, why can't we do this? And I hate these boarded up windows, and we're trying so hard to improve things visually. That I talk about this visual landscape. It's like, I want to inject fine art into this. And James is a great artist. I mean, we went to school together. That's how we met. And we've become really good friends. And he's on our committee as well. So he's nominating art to the museum as well. But, so we went to him, and he had been doing this in Manchester and was like, listen, we have all these boarded up windows and all these alleys. And, you know, these are places that people are walking to get to like this river walk that we're trying to get off the ground. Not me or the museum, but there's this other group trying to get the river walk going. It's like there's this renewed interest in all of this. It's like, will you, you know, so we got some money together basically. And we're like, will you, you know, can we pay you to basically do this? Like, and that really like lit the fire. And now every year we have a major project like that. And, so he covered up all the windows with marine grade plywood that won't rot or, you know, fall off or anything. And, he did his art on top, and you have to see it to know. But it's great. And you're walking through it in the alley separator, especially, 'cause it's like, you know, when you have a vacant building next to like your best restaurant in town, it's like there's nothing worse than like a shitty alley that's full of who knows what. So it's like all there was like a piece of plywood there. And we're like, James, you want to paint that? Like, and he did. And it looks awesome. And every time when I'm driving downtown, you know, I might see somebody like standing in front of it, looking at it or taking a selfie or... And public art is like really important to us because our whole mission is public, but we've started going into like vacant store windows and putting up art and lighting it at night. So it's like when you drive through town, it's not just this dark cave. It's like you see art and life, and you see people walking around, and not just because of the art, but it's like, hopefully that helps. And you know, so we started setting art up in windows on easels or suspending it from the ceiling. Total vacancy beyond the art, but we're just lighting it on timers. So at 6 o'clock, the lights go on and you see an art show, a little sidewalk gallery, basically. And some of those spaces are now occupied spaces too, because, you know, we held events where we partnered with the real estate agent and we're like, you know, we want literature here. We're going to have an art opening and we're going to get a bunch of people in here. We just went into what I think is the longest vacancy in downtown. It's like they call it the Hoffman Furniture Building, because that's the last business that was in there like almost 30 years ago. I was a kid when I last walked through with my mom. You know, I barely remember it. It's been empty ever since. And essentially what they do is, and I don't want to get myself in trouble, but they basically write it off as a tax write-off every year. They're not from here. And there's a lot of, they're not the only one. There's a lot of buildings like that, that it's like, it's not that we want to see a vacant downtown and that the city just doesn't care. It's that somebody owns them and they're just paying the taxes. So it's like, we can't do anything about it. Yeah. You can't just take away somebody's building. It's America. So it's like, you know, so they sit empty. So it's like, that's an opportunity for me and Amy to get in there and put some art up. So we just did this great show in this, the longest vacancy And like people were like, oh, you'll never get in there. They don't care. Like you'll never get in. One of the city councilors, in fact, told me this at a meeting, was like, you'll never do that there. Like they'll never let, trust me, you'll never get in. And we did. So with some help, we got in there. We got a key. We went in. We had all of these posters, 11 by 17. It's a show called Recovering the Classics, which is this fantastic show that travels the whole country. There's exhibits in all 50 states. It's like a 50 by 50. And what happens is all these books that are in the public domain, they have all these artists that come and recover the classics. So they reimagine like Dracula and Moby Dick. And so we have all of these original book covers that people have submitted to this great exhibit, and they sent them to us. So we printed them and we wallpapered the windows of this huge empty like Art Deco building. And now when you drive by or walk by, you just see like graphic pop art, like filling this empty eyesore basically that now looks beautiful. It's like, that's the kind of work that we're trying to do in Rochester.
Is it still up?
It's still up. So,
where is it?
It won't last forever because it's just a pop-up show. So I never like put a date on these. They just sort of happen and then they disappear. And, I don't know how long it will last, really.
Where is it located again?
So it's like basically across from the courthouse. Okay. So it's right on the main drag. So you can't miss it.
We should do a little field trip.
Yeah,
a ton of these places, but I really want to go there.
We can go to Revolution too.
It's right next door to Revolution.
Perfect.
So there, and that's where our alley separator is, and that building that's been empty for 30 years is full of art now.
And if you sit outside at Revolution, you're sitting like right underneath some of the boarded window paintings.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah, public art in Rochester, it's happening. So it's like, and we have a lot of great projects coming up too. Like we're trying to put an 8-foot-tall metal grasshopper in front of the community center right now. So that's something that we'll see in the spring. But last year, you know, in 2017, we did the boarded up windows with James Chase. And then the year after that, we worked with Adam Pearson, who's a metal sculptor. And he installed 3 sculptures on one of the gateways to downtown.
Really cool.
So we're not just focusing on the heart of downtown. We're also focusing on the trail in. It's mm-hmm. like that needs to look good too. You know, we need to be focusing on everything. So we put in those 3 sculptures in this spring. We'll put in another one at the community center. So
cool. Okay, so next we're going to do rapid fire questions, which we ask you to be brief on. We're going to ask you quick questions and just give us quick answers.
Is that a warning? Be brief.
Nobody ever down. Is, but for you, we really mean
okay.
it.
Okay, yes. Yes or no answers, yes.
Favorite museum or exhibit you've ever visited?
Okay, one time I went to PS1 and they had a dark room and you just had to find your way out. And that changed my life. There was no art or anything. It was just pitch black and you walked through a curtain and you had to find your way out of that room. It was huge. It was a big space. It was probably the size of this building, this room. And it was just pitch black. And I was like, I was so like affected by that. I just, because you really yeah. lose all sensory and you're walking through and you're like just trying to figure out where is the other curtain. But that was one of the coolest art exhibits ever because it was nothing.
What other artist has influenced you the most?
Oh my God. You know, the artists that influence me the most are not like visual artists. So like, I'm talking like performers like Elvis, Judy Garland, like these are the badass that I've watched tape of or listened to their live albums. And it's like, they're out there with a band, a spotlight, and a single microphone. No dancers, filters, nothing. It's like those people were real. Sinatra, Ella Fitzgerald, these are my heroes.
I love that answer.
Me too.
Most inspiring location you've traveled to?
New York, easily. Yeah, New York's the best. I mean, I've been to a lot of, you know, I went to Chicago and different places. But I mean, in New York, there is so much. You can't see it all.
You can get everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you could go back in time, what advice would you give your younger self?
Oh, God, don't light those fires in the house, you know? No, I'm just kidding. Like, be nicer to your mother. Be nicer to people. Like, you know, be nicer to yourself, you know? Come out of the closet before you're 26, you know? That's another episode.
That's really good advice.
Yeah. As an artist, do you have any studio habits?
Like... My art has really become curating other people's art. So like my habits are very like very specific. Like, you know, after doing like 500 shows, like I pride myself on being able to like take a nail and like put it in and like actually have it go where it needs to go. Like I don't need a tape measure or anything else. Like, so like those are like my like skills, I guess, or my habits is like trying to be very clean about things. And I hate labels, that kind of stuff. You know, I just, you know, like tags on the walls and stuff, you know, it just bothers me. I want everything to look like crisp. So
I'm not going to ask that next question because everybody bitches about it.
So okay. Including you.
Yeah. What is that?
Well, now you're going to answer it because I'm going to ask it. But is there one piece of work or collection that stands out to you as the best representation of you as an artist?
Next question. Yeah, exactly.
Of a question.
It you know is. What?
You know, actually, I will answer it. And it's ever evolving. And if anybody does have an answer for their own personal work, it means they're not creating new work.
Well, the best answer we had was Raphael Bastek, where he's like, the most recent piece I did.
Yeah.
Always changes. Like, yeah. The most recent.
That's
piece.
A real artist, though, because somebody that's always like got a bag full of their art from 2010 is not somebody that's making new art all the time. It's like a real artist is going to be making things constantly, and they hate the that they made last week because they're already on to the next thing. And that's one of the tests for us. When people come in with the white gloves and they start unwrapping everything and it's all very precious, and then you look and it's like 1998, it's like, what have you been doing since?
Yeah.
The real artist is the one that comes in with a shopping bag and they dump them out and they're like, what do you need? How many? I can, you know, just put any extras in the trash. I don't need them. I never want to see them again. You know, like I'm already on to the next thing. So it's like that's a good test, yeah. I think, to find out who's who.
Hey, that turned into a really good answer for it a did. Question you didn't want to ask.
Yeah, that we're question sucked, but thanks to me.
These next several are like insanely rapid.
You're just trying to keep me quiet.
Favorite color?
Oh, red.
Favorite taste?
Next question. I don't know. I don't know. Mango?
Dude, I love mango. Favorite smell?
God, I don't know.
You
I don't
see a
know.
Theme here?
No, I got nothing for these. Is this going into Tiger Beat?
Oh, you're really going to hate. You're really going to hate. Wait, the next
am
two.
I going to be on the cover with JTT and Leo?
You wish.
I do wish. I do wish.
I haven't heard anyone say JTT in like 2 decades.
My sexual awakening was Home Improvement.
A lot of the taste and smell ones are often related to memory. So
yeah.
We'll give you some, a lot of people have said like campfire or, you know, the smell of like.
Meatballs.
This interview's over. No, we got two more. Oh my God, that was just not expected. The giggly one.
Oh man. Favorite texture?
To feel. She always does the cat hands.
Favorite texture? Jeez. Yeah. I don't know. You must get some really weird answers to these.
I think we've heard like
people always say sexual things. It's super weird.
Well, that's I'm trying to keep it.
Like bark on a tree.
Yep.
Or who like, said that? Who said that?
I don't so know. I could, just said soft.
Why don't
that
you
was
listen
good.
To our episode?
Yeah, right,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah. He's clearly not prepared.
No.
Hmm.
No. I told you I had a 7 in ceramics in freshman year. Yeah. Anyway.
Favorite sound?
Music. I mean, I love it. Seriously. And I'll go Sold. Back. My heroes are all musicians. These are all like people that get out there and they beat the hell out of the audience and they're hitting the back of the theater and it's hitting them back too. I mean, like my favorite album of all time, talk about favorite sound, my favorite album of all time. And I say this because there's a movie coming out soon, is Judy Garland live at Carnegie Hall. Do yourself a favor. If you think she was just Dorothy or like from Meet Me in St. Louis or whatever, it's like, listen to this album and hear this woman's soul. I mean, now that some music that gives me chills, that's my answer.
I love that you and my mom have the same favorite artist.
Oh, I love your mom. Well, I've been dating your mom now for the past 6 weeks, and we're going to get together and tell you as a family. But,
oh, that's awesome. Yeah. I was hoping she would find somebody.
Yeah. Well, it's me.
He's going to be your papa.
You can call me dad. Yeah. Imagine that.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
That was awesome.
I hope so. Yeah, I'll do it again too. You know, we could, I could come back every week, you know? Or if you want to do like a Johnny Carson thing and take Fridays off, I'll be your Joan Rivers and I'll come in every week, you know, and I'll just do the show.
It.
You know?
Sassy.
Yeah. Yeah. Another hero of mine.
Do you do your own editing?
No, I would do it live. Live on tape. No cuts. No cuts.
Can you do any impressions?
No.
My last question.
I can't. I don't know. Like, I'll tell you the story on New Hampshire Chronicle. You know, like, I can't do
it. I love your bow tie.
Fritz Weatherby. Yeah,
I can't do I met him once, scared him to death. Now I'm not allowed within 500 feet. I just get that damn theme song stuck in my head anytime I watch Chronicle. There's an old-fashioned home in New Hampshire. You know. So I would have to point people to my many various projects, which would be like go to the website, check out the Rochester Museum of Fine Arts and the Community Center and at the Public Library. It's www.rochestermfa.org. The Rochester Opera House is a great place for entertainment, live theater, different things like that, rochesteroperahouse.com. And check out everything that's coming up in the next year. And like we're not like in the business of trying to disappoint. Like we are trying really hard to change the scene in Rochester. It's like, check it out. Take some time and go to the library, you know?
And if you're lazy, we will have all those links on our Facebook page.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah. So with that, show us your creative guts.
Wow, that was incredible. I assume that you all understand now why I am so obsessed with Rochester.
Yes, Matt will be a handful to edit, that is for sure. But what a freaking cool dude. His drive and passion for spreading art in his community within his actual hometown and beyond should be enough to inspire a boatload of people out there to do the same. I really hope so. It's just such a cool story, and I'm very moved by all that he does. I also can't wait to have him back on the podcast in 2020 because we didn't even get to cover all the cool stuff he does.
I can't believe we didn't even talk about his paintings.
I know. I feel terrible. It's just he had so much earnest to talk about the projects he's involved in, everything he does. It's just, what a great guy. You still have to check out his artwork. Maybe that's the first place you should check out since we didn't get to touch upon it. You should go to
mattwyattart.com. That's pretty easy.
Yeah. And if you're super lazy, again, we will post it for you on our Facebook.
You can also find the Rochester Opera House and the Rochester Performance and Arts Center and the Rochester Museum of Fine Art online and on Facebook. We'll link to all of those things on our Facebook page, or you can just Google them.
If you want to get to Creative Guts, go to Creative Guts Podcast on Facebook, and we will make your lives enriched and wonderful.
Thanks for continuing to tune in to Creative Guts.
All right, you want to say hi and a few random words of your choice just for levels?
Aboard, about, above, across, after, against, along, among, around, at, before, behind, below, beneath, between, beyond, by, down, during, except, for, from, in, into, like, of.
I don't think those were random.
It felt like a poem, and I think that maybe that'll be the headliner.
Those are prepositions you uneducated.
A preposition poem.
And I didn't even say all of them, but
it's just networking. Everybody knows it's a ton so more creative. So.
Yeah. Yeah. But enough about you and back to me. I'm totally kidding.
Where did you find this guy?
I don't know. I'm sorry.
On the streets of Rochester. Yeah.
I should have known. Those Rochester kids.
Just want to like stay tuned because we just want to keep doing more and more of. Excuse me. I just burped.
Get out.
That's the blooper.
No, I'm too famous. I don't want Laura Kanoi on NHPR to hear.